We're meant to be leaving London soon. We're moving out of London. And it's all kind of gone to shit recently because our house purchase fell through. I won't go into details, but it's tricky. But anyway, I've been thinking about what I'll miss about London. And it's quite a recent thing, but I think I will really miss the sound of a boosted line bike, you know, like a line bike that some kid has kind of rolled away and then is now cycling, and it's doing that clicking thing when it's, you know, it's the electric motor's not engaged and it's kind of clicking around the gear. And then sometimes, not all the time, that's what's weird, is that this isn't all the time, but sometimes they do that kind of plaintive whining alarm noise, like they're calling for their line bike mother. So I will miss that. Because you don't get line bikes in Suffolk. There's probably other stuff I miss. Anyway, I was thinking the other day, it's been warm and then it rains, there's flies. And I started doing this thing that my dad has always done, or always did since we were kids, where there'd be a fly at the table and he'd kind of swipe his hand at it and he'd say, "Get out of it," in a kind of, I guess it's maybe like a Cockney accent. I don't really know what I said. It's not really, "Get out of it," like that. So that's what I do now. And there's a lot of things I do like that. Like I stand with my hands on my hips when I'm kind of at ease. And that's very much like what my dad does. I probably make the same face as him while I watch the television. He always used to have this amazing habit of standing right in front of the TV, like wandering in while you're watching telly and standing right in front of it with his arms on his hips, making this kind of squinting face, saying something like, what's this? What's this? And I imagine I'll do that to the kids as they get older. There was this one great time where we were, well, it must have been when we were older, because I think we went on a fancy holiday to, you know, went to like America or something. And we went to an art museum, which I guess must have been my doing. And he just walked over to a bit of video art that was on a screen and just stood right in front of it. And there was like people sitting, I don't know if they were sitting on chairs, but everyone was kind of stood around at, you know, the kind of agreed, socially agreed viewing distance. The work, watching the work, my dad kind of stood in front of all of them. And my sister was like totally mortified, but also thought it was very, very funny. And I imagine I'll do that sort of thing. The other thing I get from my dad is this sense of dread over a lot of things. It's eased up slightly since I have had kids, I guess, because you know, your what you're worried about stops necessarily being you as much. But I still get it. I get it about, you know, bigger projects, obviously. You know, it's obvious stuff that would necessarily create its own anxiety, but it the feeling really is dread, as though there's like a kind of catastrophe or doom at the end of the feeling. And but yeah, what's interesting is that I know from my dad that we also get it about relatively small things, you know, sense of impending doom about leaving the house, or, you know, minor kind of social engagements, those kind of things. But they aren't necessarily, and I think this is true for me and Mike, though they aren't necessarily, like, I don't actually find, for example, social situations like incredibly difficult, but I do feel a sense of dread regarding. Sometimes I think I'd like to live on a busy road. I'm walking up Lewisham Way, and I think that's, I never really did that in London. Always lived on relatively quiet streets, and there's something, I mean, no one want it now with the kids or the air pollution, but there's something kind of, I always, we lived above a shop when I lived in Newcastle. Well, that wasn't a busy road, but I like the idea of, actually, I did live right in the centre of Newcastle when I first got there. I lived above a comedy club. And that was really nice. I kind of, for some reason, felt really given away. Because it was, you know, through some kind of back stairs and some weird flats above this club. And it was kind of not noisy. You wouldn't get like booming noise, but you would just get the noise of people outside, drunks. And it was very, very soothing for some reason. I find it very soothing. Apart from one night when a pigeon flew in the window, that wasn't as soothing. On a rare hot night in Newcastle. Yeah, the thing my dad is, I don't think he'd mind me saying this, he's quite a short man. He's 5'5" and he says 3/4", but I feel like that's unnecessary. Anyway, so maybe he's 5'6". But if he wants to be 5'5" or 3/4", that's fine. And I'm not sure. I'm not tall. But I think, different generations. And he was ill as a young child. And that might have affected it, I suppose. Anyway. He's got this, like, I didn't realise until recently, he's got this intense preoccupation with height. To the point of knowing the heights of celebrities. And my mum claims he's also incredibly accurate at guessing the heights of celebrities. Now, these are all the sorts of celebrities that retired people are interested in. So people who would be on, Good Morning Britain, or people on ITV primetime shows, things like I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, that kind of thing. Newsreaders, but also film stars, you know, mainstream film stars. And yeah, he can accurately, apparently to the inch, would guess people's heights because he's become so good. And people often say that on screen, it's very hard to actually understand how tall or short someone is. But my dad has trained himself up for that. And he's got what's nice, right, is that he's got this kind of completely untroubled relationship with that, with what is clearly an interest that comes from the fact that he is, you know, comes from his own short stature. I think I was talking on another one of these podcasts about how I'm trying to, we're both bald. That's definitely something I've inherited from him. He's not so bothered by his baldness. I guess I'm not that bothered by my baldness, but I was talking the other day about how I've been trying to create a kind of doxa and a commonly held belief that men who have hair after the age of 40 look ridiculous. And I still hold on to that, but I've been watching Wimbledon and Alcaraz, the young, you know, superstar, probably going to win in the second week as I record this, and he's probably going to win because he's amazing. And he's got, he's Spanish, and he's got this like insane hairline. It's like barely does his forehead start before the hair begins. I think I said that to my wife, thinking I was making a joke, but my wife was like, oh, you're obsessed with people having thick hair, aren't you? And I was thinking, like, I guess I thought I was kind of being ironic with, you know, these jokes about hair, but obviously it must be a preoccupation beyond a kind of attempt to, you know, theatrically performing my illness as a joke. I don't think my dad probably thinks about the height thing to that extent, but yeah, he just has an untroubled relationship with it. I think, you know, no, I've never explicitly said to him, is it because you're quite short that you're interested in people's height? But he's just starts talking. If you say, oh, so why do you know all these heights, Dad? He just starts talking about the height. You know, he just starts saying, well, this person's this height, this tall, and blah, blah, blah. This person's this tall. And you can look, I look it up on the internet and so on. You know, it's not, he just thinks of it as an interest, which I suppose, you know, all interests have kind of got a pathological element to them in a way, haven't they, you know? But I suppose I'm just having a look at my notes. Oh, yeah, the other thing I did. the other thing I do, which is what my dad does, is burp and then into my mouth and then try and turn away and blow it away. And what's interesting about that, right, is that I know from being a child in the car with my dad that that doesn't work. And actually, what you kind of end up doing is concentrating the burp. And whichever way you blow it, the whole, you know, the whole zone, the car zone in this case, was filled with the smell of burp. And what you're probably better off doing is just burping and letting it go out at the velocity that it was intended to come out. But yeah, I still do it. I guess just there's a belief somewhere of, you know, just an attempt to control, and the attempt is more important than the outcome. That's the other thing I do. Oh yeah, and I was thinking about this. You know, I don't think that I'm not an idiot, so therefore I don't think that everything is genetic. But there is something unstoppable about the inheritance of certain characteristics. And again, I phrase it like that purposefully to imply that one would probably want to stop certain things. You know, I don't want my, you know, I can see my daughter exhibiting some of my qualities that I'm not necessarily so proud of. I mean, she's only 3 and a half. Hopefully they'll become less extreme. I was just thinking about kind of defensiveness when accused of some kind of misdemeanor or whatever. That's a classic thing I do, being like, no, I didn't, defensively, even though I did. And also, it's not a big deal. It's fine to just have done something wrong. But yeah, I don't think it's genetic. I think it's certainly behavioral, but also somehow totally inevitable. I feel really, obviously, I guess therapy would help, I suppose, but also, I don't know. I just think there's something about becoming some version of the people who looked after you when you were young.